Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Lots of great stuff to get to with a front office feel today. A big hello to Louis Riddick, Mike Tannenbaum, and Field Yates. I'm Susie Culver. Guys, as we head into the weekend, it's time to pick up the pace. And we're calling it Fast-Paced Friday with lots of intriguing topics. Off the top, former Steelers linebacker James Harrison stirred things up when he went on Barstool's Going Deep podcast earlier this week and insinuated that Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin violated NFL rules in 2010 after Harrison was fined $75,000 for a hit on Browns receiver Muhammad Massaquai. Here's what Harrison said. The greatest thing Mike Tomlin ever did, he handed me an envelope after that. I'm not going to say what, but he handed me an envelope after that. Listen, on everything I love, on my daddy's grave, I hit that man with about 50% of what I had, and I just hit him because I wanted him to let loose of the ball. He also added, if I had knew that he was going to fine me $75,000, I would have tried to kill him. Steelers president Art Rooney released a statement disputing Harrison's claims. I am very certain nothing like this ever happened. I have no idea why James would make a comment like this, but there is simply no basis for believing anything like this. Now, all this caught the eye of Sean Payton. You remember, Payton was suspended for the 2012 season for his role in Bountygate, the NFL scandal that accused the Saints of paying players bonuses for injuring players on other teams from 2009 to 11. Here's Payton.
If people are waiting for the league to investigate that, they shouldn't hold their breath. I think, you know, what took place with us back in 2011 in so many ways was a sham. I would be shocked if that'll be something that's tucked away or under the rug at Park Avenue. They'll look into it briefly. Listen, don't get me started on that.
We're going to get you back in the doghouse, Coach.
In salary. You know, honestly, something I'll never truly get over because I know how it was handled and how it was run and the reasons behind it. And that's just the truth.
And then today, Harrison clarifying what he actually meant on Instagram. Wow, y'all, really comparing what I said to Bountygate? Mike T has never paid me for hurting someone or trying to hurt someone or put a bounty on anybody. If you knew the full story of what happened back then, you'd know that BS, fine for illegal play, wasn't even penalized during the game. Louis, what does the league do with this whole situation?
Yeah, Susie, I think they obviously do their due diligence and look into it to make sure that nothing illegal took place. But I think it's important that obviously that the Steelers via Mr. Rooney came out and denied this. James Harrison's longtime agent said he never heard anything about it and said there was no truth to it. And then James Harrison himself came out and said, look, I was not paid any money, you know, to try and injure players purposefully or try to knock players out of the game via injury. And I think it's important that those people go ahead and say that, and maybe we'll hear from Mike Tomlin as well. The league will have to look into it in order to maintain their credibility as far as investigating these types of things. But I think it's also important that people understand that back during that time and even times before that, it was very commonplace for players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, to be paid, you know, little bonuses, if you want to call it, for big tackles, for tackles inside the 20 on special teams, for interceptions, sacks, turnovers. That was something that took place regularly. It did not amount to coaches incentivizing players to injure guys and take them out of football games. That's not something that was happening. And I'm hoping that obviously that that's the case here.
Right. I agree with what Louis said. And I think the league will certainly look into it again, as Louis mentioned, for credibility purposes. However, I'm sure it's going to be a quick sort of perfunctory investigation. I think what Mr. Rooney said was accurate, decisive, and the league does not want to get into the business of looking into every claim by a former player. And again, generationally ago, things went on, be it player to player, player to coach, in terms of rewarding players for big hits like this. But that things like that have not gone to the league for 5-10 years. So again, I expect the league to look into it. Mr. Rooney's comments may take a large part of the investigation, and I think we move on. I do think the interesting X factor in all this, though, I would love to hear what Coach Tomlin has to say because he has immense credibility. He's been a great coach for so long. So I would love to hear what he has to say, and I'm sure at the appropriate time we'll hear from him as well.
Yeah, just what the league needs, what Tomlin needs right now is opening a big can of worms. Next fast-paced Friday topic follows the biggest move of the offseason, TB12 to Tampa Bay, and so much discussion about what the Patriots will look like without their Super Bowl winning quarterback for the first time in forever. Here's safety Devin McCourty.
Obviously, Tom is a huge figurehead in our organization. He's been there 20 years, but I think it'll just be more veteran guys. You know, I think guys like Julian, who haven't gotten a ton of credit for his leadership, he's a guy who will step up. Guys like James White and David Andrew, who have been captains, they'll continue to lead. But I think the biggest thing is we just got to be ourselves. We can't try to fill Tom's gap because we can't do that. But it'll be a new kind of regime, a new team. We got to embrace that and have fun with it.
Words from a veteran. Field, what do you expect from the Patriots offense this year?
Let me be succinct here, Susie, in stating the obvious. The Patriots offense will not be as good without Tom Brady. No kidding. He's the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, but it will be a little bit different. The system has been in place for 20 years, and it's not like the system will be entirely overhauled, but there are some things that Jarrett Stidham does that are different than Tom Brady that I think will be interesting to watch this year. Perhaps some new creativity, some new wrinkles from Josh McDaniels. This is a player in Jarrett Stidham who, he's not Lamar Jackson in terms of athletic ability, but he's also more athletic than Tom Brady is and could probably be a particularly effective quarterback on the move. I'm not saying the Patriots are going to have the run-pass options as the staple of their offense in 2020, but there might be some different curveballs thrown this year because of Stidham's differences in terms of skill set than Tom's.
Right, and Field, right after, you know, being known for just do your job is the Patriots are great at adjusting. Maybe no team does it better. Right. Then there's the flip side of that on this fast-paced Friday. What exactly will the Bucs offense look like when you mix Bruce Arians and the no-risk-it, no-biscuit offense with Tom Brady and what he does best? Clyde Christensen, the Bucs quarterback coach, offered up his take on the Bucs offense to Bob Kravitz of The Athletic. Here's what he said. I think what we'll see here in Tampa is Bruce's offense with a Brady influence. Bruce wants to keep the offense the same. We did some good things last year. Tom has been terrific as far as saying, just tell me what you want to do. You coach them hard. Those high performers, despite what people might think, they want to be coached. Lewis, Brady is looking for a new adventure. This is certainly it. How much do you believe, though, they need to adjust for him?
Well, I think first and foremost, protection is going to be, you know, priority number one for Tom Brady, because last year, look, completing only 32% of his passes when he was under pressure was at the bottom of the league or near the very bottom of the league. And that's something they want to make sure that they take care of. So obviously drafting Tristan Wirfs to play right tackle goes a long way to try and solidify the line. I think getting the ball out of his hands in 2.5 seconds or less will be something that you will see them try to do a lot of. They will try to attack the middle of the field off of those quick strike, quick drop type of passes, and then the play-action passing game, particularly on first and second down, which is where they'll be able to take some of those deep shots on the outside, is what they will do. So I think it's going to be a combination of what he was used to in New England as far as the quick strike passing game, and then the play-action passing game in order to push the ball down the field to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin will be something that they try and take advantage of as well. All offenses really try to do this, but I think with Tom, it starts with protection first and making sure the quick strike passing game is a big part of this offense.
Yep, traded up to get Wirfs, and you know they added that fairly talented tight end to the mix as well. Sean Payton back in the mix for our next fast-paced topic. Regarding the acquisition of former number one overall pick Jameis Winston, who as a free agent came on board in late April. Is Jameis better than the 2020 draft class? Here's what Payton had to say on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore.
I'm excited to work with him. I know our coaching staff is. When you go through this process sometimes and you're looking at the draft, for instance, and you're spending a lot of time on each position of the draft, and then you say, well, throw Winston into this draft, how would he grade? And I think he'd fare extremely well in this class, in a number of classes, enough to where someone thought that much of him where they selected him the first pick of the draft.
Mike, do you agree with Peyton? You think Winston is as good or maybe even better than, let's say, Joe Burrow?
Well, I don't know if he's better than Joe Burrow, but I think he's a really intriguing player. I scouted him when he came out. He has a lot of upside left. There's a great expression, the taste sets the floor, the character sets the ceiling. I think he has some growing up to do, which he's done. And when you compare him, Susie, to Al Smith through their first 5 years in their careers, Jameis Winston has a higher completion percentage by four points. He is almost 100 yards more per game in terms of production. And it takes some time. I've been around guys like Vinny Testaverde. You could look at Rich Gannon. This is a developmental position. His arrow is still up to me. And I don't agree. And I've heard Sean Payton say publicly about Taysom Hill maybe is the future. Taysom Hill is 31. He only threw six passes a year ago. I think this is an outstanding signing by the Saints. And I think the arrow is still very much up as it relates to Jameis Winston.
Yeah, and very mature move, obviously, by Winston, too. I said this move was not about the money, a chance to learn and grow. Final fast-paced topic takes us to some very high praise for the reigning Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes, from a division rival and one of the league's best pass rushers, Von Miller of the Broncos. Miller said this to the Washington Post on how you stop Patrick Mahomes. Succinct. Can't. We've just got to score points. If we're able to get off the field, you can hold them to a third down here and there, but that's on our offense. We've got to score on offense because you cannot, it's not smart to go into the game and say, we're going to hold Patrick Mahomes to no points. This is a Dan Patrick staple. You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. Field, defensive coordinators have plenty of time in their home offices to game plan. What do you think?
Susie, Von Miller is conducting virtual learning right now for all those players that play defense in the AFC West specifically. Von Miller has the most decorated resume of any player in the AFC West on defense. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been an NFL All-Pro. The guy is a perennial pass-rushing machine, as you mentioned. If you're any other AFC West defensive player or anybody on the Chiefs scheduled this year, you know what you don't do? You don't poke the bear. Listen to Von Miller. Don't give Patrick Mahomes any more ammunition than he already has with all of those weapons on offense. Von Miller is speaking the truth here. Now, the Broncos do have a chance to be really interesting on offense this year because if you look at their skill group, it's one of the fastest, most explosive groups on paper in the NFL. But I love the attitude and approach he's taking. Don't try to test greatness because sometimes when you do, it ends up burning you twice. Smart words here from Von Miller.
Super Bowl champs, and it does sound like they got even more dangerous. New on NFL Live from our Adam Schefter. Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti and his wife Renee donated $1 million to the Maryland Food Bank to help the growing need for assistance during the COVID-19 pandemic. Way to go! We're exactly 2 months out from the July 15th deadline for teams to sign their franchise tag player to a multi-year contract or extension. If Dak Prescott and the Cowboys miss this deadline, they will have to wait until the 2020 season is over to get a new deal done. It's a topic that has been talked about almost every day this offseason. Why no new deal for Dak yet? Earlier this week, Cowboys Hall of Fame running back Emmitt Smith, who once went through a similar situation, weighed in.
If you understand the business of leverage, when you have leverage, then you try to set the rules. And the only way you fight leverage is you fight it by establishing your grounds. And I think at some point this stuff will subside. And it's not that important right now. Dak is not worried whether or not he's going to get signed. I'm not even concerned. I believe he will get it done. And I believe the Cowboys will get it done because we don't have room to be playing games and playing chicken.
In Emmitt's case, he held out. The Cowboys started the season 0-2, and Emmitt got what he wanted. He became the highest-paid running back in the league. Lewis, where do you see the leverage in all of this?
Yeah, right now, as it stands, I still see Dak sitting in a good position because of the fact that, look, Dallas does not – they do not want to carry this huge cap number – into the 2020 season, and they don't want Dak taking the Kirk Cousins approach and really trying to force their hand as far as just signing franchise tag after franchise tag to the point where they just can't swallow it anymore and they have to let him go and let him become a free agent. Because unless they know something that I don't about Andy Dalton, or they have more confidence in Andy Dalton than anyone else does, I don't think that they view Andy Dalton at 32 years old, despite the fact he has over 130 starts and over 200 touchdown passes, as being the future. Dak is the future. They have set this up in Dallas for Dak to be the future. So I think they know that it's imperative for them to get a deal done. But right now, they're not up against the deadline, so there really isn't any pressure to necessarily get the deal done. But I still feel that Dak is sitting in a good position, and he should stand his ground, as Emmett alluded to.
Yeah, I think Dak has immense leverage, and every day it gets bigger and bigger. I think Dallas made a mistake a year ago. They're paying for it, and that bill's only going to get more expensive. Last year, they signed good players, Jalen Smith, Lyle Collins, Zeke Elliott, who had 2 years left on his contract. Those are replaceable parts. It's a lot harder to find a quarterback who's 26, he'll be 27 in a couple months, who's taking your team to the playoffs. And as Lewis alluded to, this could be Kirk Cousins, because next year, his salary would go up another 20%. It would be almost virtually impossible to field a good team around somebody when your cap number gets upwards of $38 to $45 million in terms of allocation of the cap. So if I'm Dallas, I do everything I can within reason to get this deal done immediately, because if not, he could be out the door within another 12 to 18 months.
I completely agree that Dak has the leverage in the situation, Susie, for all the reasons that the guys have laid out. I'm glad we're comparing him, by the way, to Kirk Cousins and not Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, his draft classmates, because they were not on 4-year deals. They were on 5-year deals, where the possibility of a contract extension at the end of their deal was potentially 3 years away when they each signed their extensions. But we saw this last year. The Cowboys talked the talk for a long time about not wanting to bend over to make sure that they met in the middle with Ezekiel Elliott. At the end of the day, the Cowboys decided to give Zeke what he wanted on the eve of last regular season. Jerry Jones understands he wants a Super Bowl. He wants one now. Dak Prescott presents the opportunity to win a Super Bowl, perhaps as soon as this year. They don't want to wait any longer. And like Lewis said, Andy Dalton's an accomplished 32-year-old quarterback. But there's a reason why he is not the starter on paper for any team going into this year. Dak Prescott is a quarterback you want to build around and have signed long-term.
Sounds unanimous. Advantage Dak. But while the Cowboys brass are busy with this, a very serious, unwanted situation has presented itself for the Seahawks and Giants. Warrants have been issued for the arrest of Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker and Seattle cornerback Quinton Dunbar by the Miramar, Florida Police Department, stemming from an incident that turned ugly during a cookout. Baker has been charged with 4 counts of armed robbery with a firearm and 4 counts of aggravated assault with a firearm. Dunbar has been charged with 4 counts of armed robbery. Yesterday, the Giants released a short statement on the situation, quote, "We are aware of the situation. We have been in contact with DeAndre. We have no further comment at this time."
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
A big story this offseason, big-time receivers with a change of scenery in 2020. DeAndre Hopkins, in the middle of a blockbuster trade, will be suiting up for the Cardinals. Stephon Diggs traded to the Bills. And then our two guests, Brandon Cooks traded to the Texans, and free agent Emmanuel Sanders is now with the Saints. Welcome, guys. Geez, you've both made lots of moves, 4 each to be exact. You certainly know how to find new places to live, I'm sure. Brandon, you start here. 3 trades in 6 years. Why do you believe you spent so much time on the move?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. You know, for me, I look at it as a positive. You know, going for first rounders, you know, 2 of those times, and the second round this time, it just tells me that I'm wanting. You know, it's all a part of the game. At the end of the day, like I said before, it doesn't matter where I suit up. I truly believe I'm going to ball wherever I'm at. So for me, it's just a fun journey that I've been a part of, and you know, I'm glad to be a part of it.
Emmanuel, what do you think?
What do I think about what?
Yeah, about making lots of moves. Like, you guys are obviously so talented. Why are you on the move a lot?
I mean, for me, you know, I spent, you know, 6 years in Denver and, you know, getting traded to San Fran. You know, I love the Denver Broncos organization. But for me to get traded midseason to a team that was undefeated and go all the way to the Super Bowl, that was a blessing. And then, you know, leaving San Fran, I was a free agent. So I had an opportunity to go back to San Fran, but the logistics just didn't work out. And so now I'm a New Orleans Saint, and I'm excited to get with Drew Brees and Sean Payton and play opposite side of Michael Thomas and play in the dome. You know, and so it's all a blessing, especially me being from down south, you know, to be, you know, 6 hours away from my grandma and 6 hours away from my family. You know, it's actually all working out, and it's truthfully a blessing.
That sounds great. But you mentioned it, you know, the Super Bowl experience. So let's talk about that. Emmanuel, you've played in three Super Bowls with three different teams, one win, and then, of course, most recently, San Francisco. What still haunts you from that loss to the Chiefs?
Everyone expects me to say, oh, yeah, the one overthrow, but truthfully, you know, the game, and it's not an individual sport. You know, it's a team sport. And truthfully, what haunts me is the same thing that haunts me from 2010 when I lost the Super Bowl with the Steelers. And it's the loss in general. You know, those emotions of, you know, crying and knowing that the season is over and knowing that we're this close to doing something special and being a group that for that history will ring our names forever. And we were that close and we didn't do it. And so, you know, we just didn't capitalize on the opportunity, and that will forever haunt me.
Yeah, Brandon, you suffered two Super Bowl losses yourself. How much do you feel his pain?
I can feel it at every ounce. You know, it's one of those things that you just wish you could turn, you go back and do something different. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, just two of those things back to back, both L's, at the end of the day, just motivates me, and, you know, hopefully you can get back there and, you know, capitalize. But I feel his pain, but at least he got one of them. You know, I'm 0-2 right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about the marquee quarterbacks that you guys have played with. Brandon, you'll be catching passes from Deshaun Watson, Emmanuel, Drew Brees, and that's where Brandon started. I mean, what an impressive list you guys have experienced working with. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger. So now this fresh start. Brandon, I mean, what can you share with Emmanuel about getting on the same page with Drew?
Well, I'm telling you right now, man, that's going to be easy. You talk about one of the most accurate quarterbacks in a game that ever played this game. And his hunger and the way that he goes about his work, I know how you grind, so you're going to fit right in. And whenever time comes, being able to get to San Diego with him and throw with him, I'm telling you, that's going to be an event for itself. But I see no problem you guys getting on the same page right away and using the offseason sooner or later to be able to get that done.
Yeah, Emmanuel, I mean, we know the chemistry, the timing, that stuff is so important. What is the plan to get together with Drew?
Well, as of right now, we don't have a plan, but I have a feeling I'm going to be receiving a text message pretty soon here from Drew saying that we're going to get together. But, you know, once everything kind of dies down a little bit, but I'm looking forward to that. As of right now, we're just really learning a playbook virtually like everybody else. But like I said, I'm looking forward to that text message and getting out there and gaining that chemistry and seeing like how good we can be.
Well, so that's interesting because you say you're learning virtually. Sean Payton's the only head coach that pretty much shut down the offseason and said, hey, we'll see you at training camp, which seems to be a departure of what some other head coaches have been. So what's that been like?
Well, I had to go and buy an iPad, and I've been talking to the wide receivers coach, CJ, and, you know, he sent me the whole playbook. So, I got flashcards, and I try to go over the playbook and just try to kind of learn it myself. And I think tomorrow we're supposed to go over, like, film review and just try to, you know, understand how to run routes. Because playing in a pass-happy system like this, you've got a lot of options, a lot of different ways that you can run a route based off the coverage. So, as much as, you know, the X's and O's I can try to learn on my own, it's not going to be as good as learning it in the system and doing it physically. So we're just trying to do our best to try to learn it, you know.
We've been calling this show Fast Pace Friday. So, guys, let's pick up the pace. We're going to go a little rapid fire here. Emmanuel, on each one of these questions, you go first, and then, Brandon, you quickly follow. Here we go.
All right.
Who is the old-time quarterback that you would have loved to have caught a pass from?
Oh, man. I guess Michael Vick in his prime.
Joe Montana.
Nice. All right. Defensive back that you don't like to face.
Darrell Reeves.
Stephon Gilmore.
Receiver you idolized growing up.
Randy Moss.
Steve Smith.
Favorite route on the tree.
Go ball.
Deep post.
All right, this one you can elaborate on a little bit. Favorite NFL catch of all time and why?
Oh, man. That's tough. I think of the Mario Manningham on the sideline versus the Patriots when he was with the Giants.
I'm going to have to go with Santana Holmes in the Super Bowl, the toe tap. That was pretty special.
Super guys, great job. And it seems like, you know, you're not necessarily best friends, but you have so much in common. Right before we actually went on the air, you guys started talking. It's just kind of cool just how much and how much mutual respect. Right, Emmanuel?
Yeah, for sure. Hey, good to see you, man.
Nice to see you as well. Thank you, Susie. Always great talking with you.
Great to see both of you. You've been like Super Bowl magnets, five between you. So I guess we're going to see you guys in the Super Bowl.
It's
Super Bowl 55.
I'll take that.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, guys. All right. Lots of questions swirling around the quarterbacks in the NFC North. Matt Stafford said he wasn't concerned about trade rumors in the offseason. The Packers drafted a quarterback in the first round. The Bears traded for Nick Foles. Lewis, what do you think about the Vikings' prospects, you know, especially when it comes to Cousins?
Yeah, Susie, I think the expectations are going to be high for Kirk Cousins in particular for these factors. Look, obviously, with Kevin Stefanski moving on to Cleveland, you would think that that would throw some uncertainty into the mix. But Gary Kubiak has already been there, and Gary Kubiak and Kirk Cousins seem to have struck a very nice balance under, of course, Mike Zimmer's direction as far as the run-pass ratio. And this offense was humming last year. Look, Kirk Cousins was top 10 in many crucial, you know, situational statistics, whether it be third down, whether it be fourth quarter with the game within one score. He was top 10 in all those areas. The offensive line comes back intact. They draft Justin Jefferson to really take the place of Stephon Diggs. The running game got going last year. They ran the ball about 47% of the time, exactly what Mike Zimmer wants. The defense is solid. They retooled the secondary. So there's a lot of things internally that for Minnesota as a whole would raise expectations for Kirk, considering how well he played last year. It's going to raise expectations. When then you factor in the uncertainty in Green Bay as far as are the weapons enough for Aaron Rodgers, the uncertainty in Detroit with Matthew Stafford and that coaching staff overall, whether they're going to be there in 2021, and then in Chicago, who exactly is going to be the quarterback, but I expect it to be Nick Foles. This is his time to strike, and they must strike right away once the season starts.
Yeah, I think the Vikings are actually in a really good spot here to make the leap in this division. Obviously, they made the playoffs last year, but they did not win that division. You look at Green Bay, and 13-3 last year was remarkable. But an interesting stat on that 13-3 record is that if you go back and examine every team since the merger of the AFL and the NFL, of all the teams to win at least 13 games, the Packers had the worst scoring differential of any of those teams to win 13 games. So they strike me as more vulnerable than their record would suggest. And while the Stephon Diggs trade was a blockbuster, I still believe the Vikings stack right up there in the NFC with the 49ers and the Saints as the teams that have the fewest roster holes. We know their identity. We know defensively they're basically as good as it gets in the NFC. I think the Vikings, with Kirk Cousins taking yet another step forward, should be viewed as the favorites in the NFC North going into this year, despite the fact that the Packers wore that crown last year, Susie.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
Following up on what Phil was saying about identity, here's what's really remarkable about Minnesota. Last year, 37.9% of all their passing yards came off of play action. So Dalvin Cook being healthy and durable goes a long way for this offense. he is as big a key, in my opinion, as any other player outside of Kirk Cousins. Kirk got another big extension this year. He'll be at $33 million a year. If he could take that next step and they could balance that passing offense a little bit, I agree with what Lewis and Fields said in terms of they should be the favorites of this division, given that Green Bay didn't address their weapons. I think this is really a make or break year for Kirk, that offense, and the Vikings.
Yeah, no doubt. Cousins cleared some major hurdles last season. We'll see if he can take that next step. So, is Jordan the greatest of all time? What about Tom Brady? And what if you actually cross over sports? Mike, what do you think? Who's the greatest of all?
Tom Brady. He made everybody better on and off the field. Randy Moss, Corey Dillon, he's the greatest of all time. Jordan's not bad either. I'm going with Brady.
That's a wrap for us.